Good morning, everyone, and welcome, as always, to our shiur. This morning's shiur is a topic that I think is very relevant in today's world, namely the issues involved in a person staying in a hotel, a modern-day hotel, for Shabbos. The connection to the parasha is a loose one, but we find that Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yisrael in the parasha's Barosha, Vayomer Moshe l'chovah ben ruah midyani, nosim anachnu al-makom asher amar Hashem. We are traveling to the place that Hashem told us to go to. So we're ready. For the past year or two, we've spoken about issues pertaining to traveling, and we'll do that again today. Obviously, the famous challenges, I could cut right to the chase, the famous challenges that exist, the well-known challenges that exist in today's world with going into a hotel for Shabbos, revolve around the fact that almost everything today is electronic. You have the doors, no longer do they use manual keys. This is already for many years that you have electronic keys that are used to open and close the doors. This is done as a convenience by the hotel so that they should be able to, they shouldn't have to get the keys back. Afterwards, just whether you return the card or not, it doesn't matter. They issue a new one to the next person. But in more recent times, there have become greater issues, greater, more complicated issues, which involve motion sensors in rooms. And as cost-cutting measures, they have devised systems which can sense whether a person is in his hotel room or not, and thereby they have connected the air conditioning system to that sensor, and when the sensor detects that there's nobody in the room, the temperature in the room goes up, it gets warmer, because there's no point in pumping air conditioning into a room that nobody is in. And then when a person re-enters the room, so we have the air conditioning goes back on. So too we have today in the hygienic mode, you have situations where in the toilets the sink no longer requires a manual operation that is similar to the sinks that are in public restrooms, or again there's a sensor that turns the water on, and similarly there are sensors that flush the toilets. So all of these things involve questions of Shabbos. Obviously, the fact that the activation of electronic eye, whatever it may be, involves a situation for Shabbos, a potential issur of Shabbos. And the question is, really, what could be done about it? Now, to be honest, there's not a tremendous amount to my knowledge that could be done about these last few problems, other than to have them deactivated. But I would like to take the opportunity just to discuss some of the underlying issues that are involved. Because a lot of times a person may have the feeling that, you know, I didn't do it and I didn't want this to happen, and, you know, what could you do? It wasn't my idea that they rigged up the room this way, and I'm not interested in that happening at all. So I just would like to take the opportunity, really, from a theoretical standpoint, to discuss this, and then maybe we'll get to some practical solutions at the end. Okay, the basic issue that comes up in halacha is, it's important to know that an idea in the Hilchos Shabbos that people struggle with is the idea of the unintended result, where a person is doing something on Shabbos which in and of itself may be permissible for the result that they are intending to do. However, there is an unintended result that happens simultaneously which violates Shabbos. So the classical example of this is found, if you look here in the sheet, it's brought in the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos. It's actually a brisa that's in Maseches Beya, but just to make it easier, if you look here in the Gemara on the fourth wide line, the Gemara says, D'tanya, there's an asterisk right before the part that I'm quoting from. D'tanya, Rabbi Shimon says, Gorer Adam Mita Kisei V'Safsal. A person is allowed to drag on Shabbos on a surface that is like a dirt floor. Let's say you have a person outside, for example, with a dirt floor. A person is allowed to drag a bed, a chair, or a bench. so long as his intention is not to make a furrow. Meaning like this, we know that one of the 39 melachos of Shabbos is the melacha of plowing, the melacha of choresh. A person is not allowed to plow. Now, what constitutes plowing is not necessarily where you're just simply where you're plowing a field with the intention to plant in it, but anything that involves digging, you know, going under the ground and creating a furrow in the ground would be a violation of that melacha. So therefore, the question comes up, if a person is going to drag on a dirt floor a chair, he needs the chair, he's not interested in plowing, he's not interested in planting, he needs the chair moved from one side of the room to the other, it's too heavy for him to lift it up off the ground, so he's going to drag it. While he's dragging it, so it's also going to make some sort of a furrow in the ground. So this is what's called a davar she'eino mischaven. Davar she'eino mischaven means an unintended result, where you're doing something and the act that you're doing, you have your own motivation for. You're trying to move the chair, but unintentionally, this is not your goal, but it may be happening that you're making a furrow. So here there is a famous machlokas of Tanan. It's brought in the Gemara Maseches Beya, and the halacha is paskin in the view of Rav Shimon. That's what the Gemara says over here, that we paskin like Rav Shimon, that this is permissible. That this is permissible. An unintended result, even though what you did constitutes a malacha, but nevertheless, since that was not your intention, so that would be okay. Why that is a discussion in its own right, but these are the facts. This is the shita of Rav Shimon. Okay, now, that I think is fairly well known, but equally well known is that there's a major qualification to this leniency. That this, that Rav Shimon said, does not necessarily, is not the final word in the discussion. Because the Gemara tells us on Daf Kuf Gimel Maseches Shabbos, if you look here on the sheet, it's pretty much halfway down the page, right before the second Mishnah on the page. The Gemara tells us, there's a discussion over here that's taking place in the Gemara about a person who is removing certain things from the ground in order to for his own purposes. So without getting into it, the Gemara says va'abaya v'rava da'amri tarvayu molder of Shimon b'psik reisha v'lo nichalei. Excuse me, Rav Shimon b'psik reisha v'lo yomus. That Rav Shimon, the very same person who is lenient when it comes to the unintended result, is strict when that unintended result is guaranteed to happen. If that unintended result is certain to happen, so the Gemara refers to this as a psik resha v'lo nichale. What is a psik resha v'lo yamos? Meaning that we find the expression psik resha v'lo yamos means that a person who is interested in having the head of a chicken, for whatever reason, he's interested in having the head, but he doesn't want the chicken to die. So he's going to cut off the chicken's head, but he's not interested that the chicken should die. Right? So the Gemara uses that expression as like a psik resha v'lo yamos, where you think you're going to cut off the head and the chicken is not going to die, just because you didn't want that, but it's guaranteed to happen. You cannot cut off the head of a chicken to have it for your own purposes without that happening. So therefore, the Gemara says that in such a situation, the leniency of a davar she'eino mischaven does not apply. Okay? This leniency does not apply. Now, it would be worthwhile to just spend a moment to see exactly the case that the Gemara here is speaking about. So if you go back a few lines to where it says Tana Rabbanan, okay, so the Gemara says, the Gemara says the follows, Tana Rabbanan, Hatolesh Olshin, a person who pulls out from the ground on Shabbos certain growth, certain type of weed that grows in the ground, okay, so, but the reason why he's doing this, so the Gemara goes, Amazarik Zerodim, a similar case, so it says, Imra Achila, if he's doing it because he wants to eat these items that he's removing from the ground, so that would be a Malacha del Raisa, that would be a violation of a Torah law, and the Raisa lists off how much he would have to pull out in order for it to be a Torah violation. Okay, it says if he's going to eat it himself, in lebehema kamari piagdi, if he's going to feed it to an animal, it's a different shear. In lehesek, if he's pulling these weeds out of the ground because he wants to use them as fuel for a fire, so then there's a different amount that would be needed in order to have violated the Torah law, kidei levashel be'akala. And then it says, im liyafos es akaka. Okay? So the Gemara says, but if he is doing it, then what about if he's doing it to clean up, to make the area look nicer? So then it says kol shein, then whatever you pull out would be already considered a violation of the Torah law. To which the Gemara asks, atu kuo lo yafos es akaka ninu. So the Gemara says, one second, if you're telling me that if he pulled out the weeds in order to clean the ground, that it should look nicer, then there is no shear. Then anything that he pulls out already is considered a violation of the Torah law, because he's, anything that he removes is already making the area look better. So then, in all of the above-mentioned cases, that's true. In other words, why do we say that if he intended to eat it? If he intended to eat it, there would be a larger shear. Any time he pulled it out, regardless of what his intention was, whether he intended to eat it, or he intended to feed it to his animal, or he intended to use it as firewood, fuel for a fire, whatever it is, but while he's doing that, he's also making the area look nicer. And if you're going to tell me that any time you remove anything, and it makes the area look nicer, you have violated the Torah law, so then why should there be a different amount needed if he wants to feed it to his animal? To which the Gemara says, so the Gemara answers this question by saying, Rabbi Rav Yosef, Damri Tavayu Ba'agam. So one answer that's given is that when we say that if he's feeding it to his animal, or he's eating itself, there's a certain amount that he needs to pull out in order to violate the law, that's when it was in hefker land, when it was in a swampy area that nobody owns. And in such a case, nobody cares what it looks like. So therefore, there is no issue of making the area look nicer. That's one answer. To which the Gemara gives a second answer and says, Abaya Omar, Afilu Tema Besada Delav Aga, Ukagon Deloka Mechavim. So Abaya said, no, I can tell you that we're speaking even in a situation where he owned the property himself, or where it wasn't a swamp, let's say. It was not a swamp. It was owned by somebody. But the reason why there is no issue of making the area look nicer is because of the fact that he did not intend to do this. If he pulled it out to feed his animal, he wasn't intending to make the area look nicer. And therefore Abaya says that's not a problem. To which the Gemara asks the question that we just mentioned, V'abaya v'rava damri tavayu modi Rabbi Shimon b'psik reisha v'loyamos. Right? So they say, well, what do you mean? But what difference does it make? In other words, whether this was his intention or not. If it's a psik reisha, if it is a certain, an unavoidable result, then even if it's unintended, it's prohibited. In other words, we said that there is a heter for Rav Shimon that we hold la halacha, that if something is an unintended result on Shabbos, it's mutter. But that's only if it's not unavoidable. Meaning that if it's possible that it may not happen, when you drag the chair, you may not make a furrow, so then even if you did make a furrow, we say that's okay because it was an unintended result. However, if doing what you did made it unavoidable, it's definitely going to happen. There's no question. So then that's what's called a psik reisha, that you cannot do. So the last question here is that we're back to our original question, that what does it help if the person pulled out these weeds in order to feed to his animal? So what if he intended to feed his animal? But by doing so, he is achieving the unavoidable result of making the area look nicer because he has removed the weeds from the ground. To which the Gemara answers, well, tzricha de ka'ovid ba'ara de chavre. The answer is that he didn't do it on his own land, but rather he did it on the land of some other person. He did it on the land of his friend, on some other person, not his own. That's the Gemara's answer. In other words, had it been his own field, then yes, it would have been prohibited. And regardless of what he intended to do, regardless of whether he intended to feed it his animal or use it for fuel for a fire, makes no difference because this is an unavoidable result. However, that's only if it's his own area. But if it's someone else's area, then the din is different. So says the Gemara. So anyone reading this Gemara has the question that, what difference does it make whether it's his area or someone else's area? The point is that he's making the ground look better. So if he's making the ground look better, right? There's no question that that's true. That's an unavoidable result. So that's a psik reisha. Psik reisha removes the leniency of Rabbi Shimon of a davar she'eino mischaven. So if that's the case, so it's not his field. So what? So what? But it's his friend's field. But he made his friend's field look nicer. So why is that? Why is that any different? So the answer to this question is the basis of a major machlokas in the Rishonim, which has relevance in halacha. There are two answers, essentially two answers that are given to this question. They're both quoted in the Tosfos here on the left side of the page. I'm not going to read it; it's very lengthy. But basically, the answers are as follows. The first answer is given by one of the Rishonim, the author of the Sefer HaOruch. Okay, the Oruch is if you're not familiar with the Sefer HaOruch, was essentially a dictionary that was written in the times of the Rishonim. It was written about 700-800 years ago, defining certain terms that come up in the Gemara. But along with it, it wasn't just the dictionary, but the author, the person who wrote it, was a very great scholar, and he included certain halachic opinions in the process. And when he got up to this area, he put in his explanation of this Gemara as follows. The Aruch said that the reason why there's a difference between your field and your friend's field is because in your field, you are happy about the result. In other words, if you're pulling out the weeds, so even though you're pulling them out in order to give it to your animal to eat, or you're doing it in order to throw into a fire, which in itself is a violation of Shabbos, but that violation requires a shear. In order for a person to have violated the Torah law, it requires a shear. Right? So to there we say that if it's your own property, so as you're pulling out the weeds, you're enhancing the appearance of your own property, and for that there is no shear. So in that case, you would violate Shabbos immediately. However, says the Aruch, if it is your friend's field, so then you don't care. In other words, I who am doing it, it doesn't benefit me. So if it doesn't benefit me, it goes into the area of halacha that is called a psik reisha delo nichale. A psik reisha delo nichale that means an unavoidable result that I am not interested in. An unavoidable result that I am not interested in. Now, let me just clarify to avoid a common misconception. It does not have to be an unavoidable result that I am opposed to. In other words, a lot of people think that psik reisha delo nichale, I didn't want this to happen. Right? I'm against it. I wish it wouldn't have happened. You don't have to go that far. All you need for this is apathy. All you need is that I don't care. It doesn't affect me. So it helps my friend. Okay. It's no consequence to me. I wasn't trying to help him. You know, it could be, you know, whatever. That wasn't on my agenda. That wasn't on my agenda. So it's not like I hate him. In other words, you'll say, well, do I need to hate him? If I hate him, then I'm upset that I helped him. Right? You don't have to go that far. All you need to say is that I don't care. I don't care. Right? It is of no consequence to me that this happened. Says the Aruch, in that situation, it's mutter. In other words, Rav Shimon's rule that a davar she'eino mischaven, that an unintended result, is permissible, and has the caveat that, however, if it's an unavoidable result, it is prohibited. Says the Aruch, that depends on whether that unavoidable result is something you're interested in. If you're interested in it, then fine. But if you have no, it has no bearing on you, then it's permissible. So says the Aruch. Okay, now this is a good, nice, lenient opinion. However, Tosfos goes on. It's a very long Tosfos. You can see here on the left side of the page, and quotes Gemaras. There are several places across the Shas where this issue comes up, and they're going back and forth, and each one is up for interpretation, how you understand it. But to make a long story short, Tosfos does not come out this way. Tosfos says that even in a situation of a psik reisha delo nichale, he agrees that it would not be a violation of a Torah law. However, he says he doesn't go so far as what the Aruch said. He doesn't go so far as to say that it's outright mutter, but rather Tosfos says it would be prohibited midrabanan. It would not be prohibited min haTorah. Okay, now the reason why he needs to say it's not prohibited min HaTorah because the very Gemara that we read requires explanation. In other words, the Gemara said that why is it that if you pulled it out to feed your animal, there's a certain shear? Why don't we simply say that anything that you pulled out of automatically violates the law? So the Gemara said, because it wasn't your field. So Tosa said that, what that means is that if it's not your field, so it's not a Torah violation. And that's all the Gemara is interested in. But is it a rabbinic violation? Yes. Now, so there you have it. We have two opinions. Psik Reisha de Lo Nichale. Is it mutter outright? That's what the Aruch holds. Or is it prohibited, but midrabanan, permissible min HaTorah, but prohibited midrabanan? Now, where this comes up in modern day Hilchos Shabbos in several situations. Okay, one situation where this comes up is the great old security camera case. Okay, we have a security camera that's filming a person as they walk by, and the image is being projected somewhere, which violates one of the laws of Shabbos. Okay, so now, if you go with the opinion of the Aruch, there is no problem walking in front of such a camera because of the fact that I don't care, I have no interest in this. Right? So you'll say, what do you mean? But everyone's interested in having a security camera, but we're only interested in having a security camera for the crooks. Right? In other words, the crook I want on the camera, but I'm not a crook. Right? So therefore, I'm not a security risk. So if I'm walking past this camera and my image is being projected somewhere, so what? It's of no consequence to me. I don't even benefit from that if I'm staying in that hotel because that's not going to help anybody. I'm not planning on doing any sort of illegal activity. So having my image doesn't do anything. Okay? So that would be, according to the Aruch, would be outright permissible. However, according to the Shita of Tosfos, it's a whole different story because Tosfos says that it's true, it's not a malacha d'oraisa, it's not a violation of a Torah law. However, it is a violation of an issur d'rabbanan. So therefore, that would present an issue. Yeah, go ahead.
Who says that it's a problem to begin with?
Who says it's a problem to begin with? So why it's a problem, I can't, I'm not... So you're triggering that to happen. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. This is beyond the scope of what I know. I'll be honest with you, but it seems to be a consensus of opinion that such a thing would be a violation of a law. Yeah, of a Torah law.
Why would you put a subjective factor like that? I'm not a crook here for that. But yeah, like the fact that the hotel has security. The hotel has a big sign that says you have no security here whatsoever, you're on your own.
Right.
Probably wouldn't have checked in. So I do appreciate that it's there. I do want them to have a camera.
Right. No, I want them to have the camera, but I don't need the camera to be taken. There is no benefit to me for the camera to be photographing me. That's what they say. Okay. Now listen, I hear, you know, as you're saying, but I want the camera to photograph everybody. Okay. This is what the poskim say, that this is considered, this is said that the son-in-law of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and I believe his father-in-law agreed with this, that this is not considered a psik reisha d'nichalei. Now, another situation where this would come up, possibly, would be where you have, even not in a hotel, when you walk in the street, many people have the security lights on their house that are motion activated. I know, on my way home from shul on Friday night, I know there's a house on 173rd Street on my way home that has such a light. And when you walk by, the light goes on. So again, you come to this issue. Except that here, there may be, you see, if the street was dark, and that light helped you see, you wouldn't be so quick to say that it's a psik reisha d'lo nichalei, because what do you mean? I don't want the result. I'm benefiting from having the light. The light goes on, now I can see. But since there's already light going in the street, so I don't need this light. The only reason the person who, the homeowner has it there is in order to trigger off an intruder. Right? So that too would be a psik reisha d'lo nichalei. So here you get into this question again. So if we held the halacha like the Aruch, there would be no issue whatsoever. But if there is a situation, but being that we hold the halacha like Tosfos, or with Choshesh, the Shulchan Aruch holds the opinion like Tosfos, so then it becomes a little bit more complicated.
So if you're familiar with the block, then as you approach it,
you try to avoid it. Right, so the question is, what happens if you can't avoid it? So in all of these cases, the consensus is that if you can't avoid it, it's alright. If you can't avoid it, it's all right. Now, why that is complicated. See, this reason alone, I'm just trying to bring up the central issue. There are other factors. There are a lot of technical points that go into it. When you put together a few different points, it can make a chant out of all the different possible angles here. It comes out that there's enough of a basis to say that it would be mutter b'shas hadchak. So I once discussed with a leading American posek this was years ago, 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago, when they first came out with these security cameras, and he said to me that if you could easily, when the motion sensor lights, he said to me, if you could easily avoid it, you should try to, but if you can't, if it's going to mean you're going to have to totally go a different route, which is going to take you out of your way, and it's going to be a burden for you, then it's all right. So, you know, why that is, I say again, is complicated. It could be because of the fact that it's viewed as an issa d'rabbanan, which we'll see right now, a discussion on that topic. But nonetheless, that's the consensus here. Yes?
Practically speaking, we have this issue all the time in hotels, not in front of the hotel, but in the back of the hotel, where everything is on a motion sensor.
Right.
As long as there's some amount of light there, there's always... In any long hallway, there's always a little bit of light.
Right.
You can always see your way through.
Right, right.
So if you have more light, what difference
is it? Right, so it could, so, yeah, okay. I don't see that. That's what is said in terms of Hanoa from a malacha, but here it's a little trickier because you have to determine if it makes it nichalei or long nichalei. It could be that that's so. All right. Anyway, now, notwithstanding this, so now we come to the next issue, which would be that this argument that takes place between the Aruch and Tosfos about a psik racial onichla, which is a very fundamental machlokas. The question is, they were arguing when it came to a violation of a Torah law, which was the case here in the Gemara, of a person pulling weeds out of the ground. The question would come up, what about if it was only an issa d'rabbanan? What about if what was happening was in and of itself only a rabbinic law? Would that make it any better? So here also, there are different opinions out there. Okay, there is a leniency that is brought, let's see if we have it here on the sheet, if you turn over the page, in Simon Shinya Dalit, if you look in the Mishneh Berurah, which is in the bottom section on the left-hand column, okay, the let's see if we could track it down here. So he says three lines from the top in the left-hand column. So the Mishneh Berurah says, "V'ine linyan ikar adin eskimu amagan Avram ve'yorab v'agrav v'ganar v'kiv eger depsik reisha aser afram milsel derabbanan." Okay, that a psik reisha in and of itself. In other words, now let's put aside the lo nichale aspects for a minute. We said earlier that a psik reisha, an unavoidable result, removes the leniency of the unintended result. The question is, does that apply only by an issa d'oraisa, or is that even by an issa d'rabbanan? So here there's also an argument, one of the Rishonim, one of the authoritative Rishonim, Trumas Hadeshen, says that a psik reisha outright but would be permissible, an unavoidable result would be permissible by an issa d'rabbanan. However, the Mishneh Berurah brings here from many poskim that disagree, and many of the later poskim said that it would be prohibited even by an issa d'rabbanan. However, that is speaking about an unavoidable result, that you're happy about. An unavoidable, a psik reisha that benefits you. But what about a psik reisha d'lo nichale by a rabbinic law? What about if you put together the fact that, first of all, this thing is only prohibited by the rabbis? And second of all, on top of that, this result is not something that you're interested in. Does that make it any better? So here, there is a contemporary machlokas. So Rav Avadi Yosef, in the Sefer Yichavadas, says that would make it permissible. If you could get it down to an issa d'rabbanan, if somehow the violation that was taking place was only prohibited by the rabbanan, and what you were doing was a psik reisha d'lo nichale, that it was an unavoidable result, but it was something that you were apathetic to, and you didn't care, it didn't mean anything to you that this was happening. So then, in that situation, Rav Avad Yosef said it would be mutter. That's what he said. And there are those who follow this psak. There are people that follow this psak. Others say that and so you need it to be this is the Rabbanan for two different reasons, that it would have to be what's called Trey the Rabbanan. But again, this is mainly being presented on a theoretical level because it's hard to know without a thorough knowledge of the contemporary Hilchos Shabbos, meaning a person has to know the laws of Shabbos and has to know with all the technology what is being violated. In other words, what's the issue? Like I said before, what's the issue of walking in front of a surveillance camera? What's the issue of turning on the lights? In other words, is that a rabbinic law or a Torah law? So if it's a Torah law, obviously the stakes are higher. If it's a rabbinic law, so then already there's room to say that in a psikration of Onikolei, one of the Gedolei Apostolim of our time said that was mutter outright. Not everyone follows that, but at least there's room to maneuver. But what's required, if a person is going to present this shaila to a rav, a person has to know, you have to be very specific, what exactly is going on here. You have to know the situation exactly. This is what's happening. Is this a total violation of a Torah law or a rabbinic law? Because that could make all the difference in the world. Okay, now, yes. Because the technology changes.
Technology changes day to day, almost. So just because you heard that
25 years ago,
or forget 25 years ago, just because the security system was okay 2 years ago,
maybe it's different. Okay,
security system might be.
That's true. So therein you have a lot of these questions. Now, where is this relevant with the hotels? So obviously, if you have a motion sensor in a room or that's going to activate the air conditioning when you walk into the room, so you'll say, well, that was their decision. Nobody asked me about that. You know, as far as I'm concerned, they should have left the air conditioning on the whole time. Okay, but again, that doesn't help, because even if you'll say, here it's hard to know, the air conditioning is probably a psik ratio than Nicolay because you want it to be cool in the room. But even let's say it activated something that you didn't care about so much, right? But it still remains at best the psikration of the lo nichalei, which in and of itself is not outright permissible. So therefore, we have these considerations. This is the big challenge. In other words, when you go into these types of situations, the fact that a person says, you know, they did what they wanted, it had nothing to do with me, they didn't ask me, I'm not interested in this, they're trying to save money, that's why they made it go off, and now it's going on, don't blame me for this, right? That doesn't help, because of the fact that we have this concept of psik resha, that even though what's happening is unintended, but it's unavoidable. And if it's unavoidable, there's going to be a problem, even if it's a result that you're not interested in. Certainly, it would be an issue if it's a result that you are interested in. Okay, now, so, yes, Dad. Okay, so in general, with refrigerators, this was even the old refrigerators was a big question that went back, goes back for pretty much from the beginning of the era of refrigerators, and the psak changed over the years. In other words, the people who, you know, remember back to those days, I still have a family member, she would be well in the 90s, who will only open their refrigerator on Shabbos when the motor is running. And when the motor is not running, they will not open, because again, you have an issue with the fact when you're opening the door to the refrigerator, so there is a thermostat that's measuring the temperature. And when you open it, so hot air is being allowed in, which is going to somehow perhaps trigger it to go off again. So there were people originally that did that, but the consensus today is almost nobody concerns themselves with this anymore, right? Why? I'm not sure. It could be that it's not a psik resha. That could be the reason. I'm not sure.
I think that it's more problematic nowadays. Is the general consensus was that it was not a psik resha.
Not a psik resha.
You could open it and close it and may not have to go out. However, right. The new refrigerators nowadays have sensors. If you open it, the bada is going to go on. You more.
Right. Okay. So the old fridges. See, this is why, you know, keep life simple. You won't have as many problems. The old fridges aren't so sophisticated. So you could open and close it. There's no guarantee anything's going to happen. Right. Everyone does it. You go to everyone's house. They open the refrigerator. And nobody asks any questions. So originally there was the psak that circulated amongst people that you should only open it when the motor is on. But okay, it could be that today that you know, I don't want to make trouble here, but you would have to know if you're getting a very sophisticated, you know, a very sophisticated refrigerator. The same thing with these ovens. You know, a lot of times you have the same situation with ovens, opening it and on Yontif, you know, where you may be causing it to go on again, if it's an electric oven and different situations like that. So it's not such a simple thing. So a person really, I don't know enough, I'll be honest, I'm not up on the technology, but these are questions that a person needs to ask. I know that the Star K Kashrus organization in Baltimore has done a great deal of research in this area, and they, I think, have a list of devices of equipment that are permissible, and I believe they keep on top of it. So a person would, they have a very good website, the Star K website, and a person could check that out.
The fancy ovens have a
Shabbos. Yeah, okay. The fancy ovens have it. That's from their advocacy. Yeah.
In your first example about the weeds being colder cut.
Yes.
Yes,
it is. That's the point. No, in other words, the Gemara is saying that if you pulled out the weeds to feed to an animal, it's a violation of the Torah law, but there's a certain shear. In other words, to violate an Isser in the Torah sense, that there's a certain, a lot of the malachos, there's an amount that has to be done in order for it to be considered a violation of the Torah law. So the Gemara's question was that there's only a shear when it comes to feeding. But if it comes to making the area look nicer, then anything that you pull out, by definition, makes the area look that much nicer. That was the Gemara's issue. Okay, so now, what can a person do in these situations? So there is a question of a psik resha when you're dealing with amiru akum. In other words, what about telling a goy to do something that would be a psik resha? So here too, there's room for debate, but here we generally hold as permissible. Okay? And therefore, in a situation, if a non-Jew does it, then if it's a psik resha, it would be permitted. In other words, even though we know that in general, a person cannot on Shabbos go ahead and say to a goy, please turn on the light for me. You can't just do that. Okay? The reason for this is, we once discussed, there are various reasons why that is, but in general, you can't do amira lenachri. You know, so there could be mitigating circumstances, it's a share in its own right, but the basic principle is you can't do it. However, that's to tell him to do a malacha that in and of itself is guaranteed to happen. But if what you're telling him is an unavoidable, unintended result, right, so that the psik resha, then the consensus of the poskim is that would be permissible. Okay, so, theoretically, if you had a motion sensor that's going to turn on a light in the room, so if you could get a guy to go into the room first, so then no problem, because he turned the light on. He did it, you didn't tell him to turn the light on, right? He walked into the room, the light went on, okay. Now, that in itself, however, is also not so simple, because aside from the prohibition of telling a goy to do malacha on Shabbos, there is also a question of benefiting from the malacha of a goy on Shabbos. Hanoa mi malachas aklam, and the two don't necessarily go together. So therefore, you could have a situation where the goy did it on his own, but you still can't benefit. If he did it for himself, you could benefit from it. But if he did it for you, so then you can't benefit from it. So it's not such a simple thing. So if he went into the room first, if you got the bellhop to go into the room, and wow, great, the light went on, the air conditioning went on, everything went on, but he did it, not me. So the question is, but you're benefiting from what he did. So here, there could be mitigating factors. What's considered benefit in this area is questionable. If there was light in the room anyway, the fact that he made it brighter would not be considered a benefit. The air conditioning may be considered a benefit. But if he went in strictly for his own purposes, so then he did it for himself, and not for you. In other words, if you told him, I can't go into this room because it's the Sabbath, I need you to go in first, then he did it for you. But if somehow you could lure him into the room because he needs to fire you down. By the way, didn't you drop a $50 bill there yesterday when you brought, right? You may want to look for it, right? And he goes in and now everything goes on. So then already it could be it's different. Yeah.
What if it's understood? You're on a business trip, two are going to stay in the room, so you make sure you're going to Patrick O'Shaughnessy.
Okay, so good question. So what do we say about this? So basically, to make a long story short, so now we'll come back to this point in a minute. Let's just go to the other great issue of opening the locks. Opening the locks with the electronic key, which is in itself a problem. Because a Jew cannot do that, there's no question. Whether that's a malacha d'oraisa or a rabbanan could be discussed, but that is the consensus of all the poskim is that that's not acceptable for a Jew to do. Now, there are many poskim that say that it's only a malacha d'rabbanan, because the triggering of electricity, in the opinion of many, is only a problem of havara. It's only a problem of something being heated up. So therefore, a lot of times, like an electric light in a regular bulb, an incandescent bulb, when you turn on the electricity, so the metal filament or whatever is getting heated up, and that's where the problem lies. But short of that, it would not be a malacha on the Torah law, on the Torah scale, would only be an issur d'rabbanan. That's what many people hold. Okay? However, there is the opinion of the Chazon Ish who held that the problem with using electricity on Shabbos is that you're completing a circuit, and completing a circuit is a malacha of boner, and that happens regardless of what, you know, whether even a fluorescent light bulb would be that problem, or any other electrical activity. So now, it happens to be the consensus is that it's an issur d'rabbanan.
It's a temporary
circuit. Right, okay, so it's a question. The bottom line is, according to many, it would only be an issur d'rabbanan. Now, if that is true, that it's only an issur d'rabbanan, so now we come to the question of, can you tell a guy, please open the door for me? In other words, what some people say to do in these situations, we have the hotel door with the electronic eye. Some people say, so don't lock your door. Put some tape over the door and leave it open. Okay, now, a lot of people are uncomfortable with this. Right, of course, the rooms all have safes, so they say, well, put all your valuables in a safe, and what's he going to take already? What's the worst thing that's going to happen? But many people are understandably uncomfortable with this, and people can't sleep at night with the thought that somebody can get in. Of course, it could be that the room has a deadbolt lock on top of that, so even if you taped over the electric eye, but still somehow you could lock it. I don't know. I never really tried it. But whatever the case may be, it's not the best solution for many people, right? In other words, you have to be realistic here. You know, it's uncomfortable going out of a room on Shabbos knowing your door is open. So, what can you do? So what a lot of people say is, say, ask a guy to do it. Right? Let's ask one of the guys. Say, listen, it's Shabbos for me. You know, please understand. I can't open it. Can you open the door for me? Now, that you'll say, but this is a malacha. This is prohibited on the basis that's a miru akum, that you're telling a guy to violate a Shabbos law. So here is where the question of whether this is d'oraisa or d'rabbanan comes in. Because we have, when they gave the handout here, there were two separate handouts. I don't know if everyone has both of them. But if you have the one, it's a one-sided sheet that has the number, page number 202 on it. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch here in Hilchos Shabbos cites the opinion of the Rambam. That the Rambam said, Dover she'eino mischavin, the Rambam says, an unintended result. Something which is not a malacha, something that is prohibited on Shabbos only midrabbanan, something that is prohibited only by the rabbis, you're allowed to tell a guy to do on Shabbos outright. You can go ahead and walk over to a non-Jew and say, please do this for me on Shabbos, on the following conditions. If it's one of the following three, any one of the following, v'hu sheyi yasham miktzas choli, either it involves a person who's not well, meaning, for example, you needed, let's say, go get medicine, it's going to involve an issur d'rabbanan, you could tell a guy to do it. O yiye l'dover tzorech harbe, or if it's a very great need, o mipnei mitzvah, or if it is for the purpose of a mitzvah. Okay, in any one of those three scenarios, you could tell a guy outright to go get a shiur, to go do a shiur. Okay, now, the opinion of, the opinion of the Mishnah Berurah, if you look down on the bottom, Chaf Beis in the Mishnah Berurah, which is five lines from the bottom, so when we say it's a great need, so he says, I am Magen Avraham, Shemasik, Didafka, B'makom, Hefzik, Gadol. That a great need means it's going to be a big loss. But if not for this, a person should not be lenient. Then he says, okay, whatever. This is what he says. And so the question is, what type of need is necessary in order for you to tell a guy to do it? A lot of poskim say that if you're locked out of your hotel room on Shabbos or on Yontif, so you can't, what are you going to do? You can't sleep, you can't rest. It's a case of tsar. For a person, the mere fact that you're paying so much for the room and you can't use it, also a big tsar, right? But the fact that you can't sleep in your bed is something that's makom tsar. So therefore, the opinion of a lot of poskim is that in such a situation, you could ask the guy, and I think many people rely on this, that if need be, if you want to lock the door of your room, you go over to the non-Jew who's there and say, can you please open the door for me? It's my Sabbath, I can't do it. Now, will this help for the other stuff, for the motion sensors? That's questionable. That's questionable, because like I say, first of all, you need him to walk into the room. But also, he's doing it for you. So if he's doing it for you, so then the question of Hanah comes up. In other words, if the room would be unacceptable with the air conditioning at the higher setting, and now he triggered it to be, make it comfortable, so now it's already a real Hanah that you're getting, so it's quite, that's highly questionable. But to open the door in and of itself, most contemporary poskim say, if need be, you could do that. You just go over to the person and do that. Yes?
Why is the key not muktzah?
The key is not muktzah. I don't know. That's an interesting question, why the key is not muktzah. I didn't think about that, to be honest with you. Okay, that's an interesting question. I don't know. I have to check that out. So we'll have to get back to you on that one. But the fact is, sometimes they have their own key. Okay, if you tell them to bring his own key. Now, we'll just end off on this. There are other options that are available. What some people do, I actually saw online. I didn't think anybody ever did this, but I was reading last night that somebody says he does this all the time. A guy goes to a hotel for Shabbos on business very often. So what he does is he buys boxes of chocolate. And he tells the non-Jewish workers that I have a gift for you, a bottle of beer. I have a gift for you inside the room. So therefore, when that happens, the non-Jew is opening the door for his own purposes. He's doing it together. He's not doing it for you. It's good for him. So he goes in and gets it, and therefore that would be considered completely a daita d'nafshei. That's what some people say to do. I don't know how realistic that is. Okay, the other thing which is said in the name of Rav Eliashiv is that he said that it's permissible to go over to the hotel manager before Shabbos and say, listen, say, this is the situation. I'm an Orthodox Jew. I can't rent this room for Shabbos unless the door can be opened for me. I just can't. There's no way for me to do it in a permissible way. And if you tell the person that, I'd like to stay here, but I can't unless I could be accommodated in some way, so then that would be considered, Rabbi Yashar said, that's considered they're doing it for themselves. They're doing it for themselves because of the fact they want to rent the room. It's good for them that they want the business. So when a guy is doing it for himself, that already makes things a lot better. Now again, I don't know that that's going to help for all the other motion sensor problems, but at least to get in the door. In other words, if you tell the person ahead of time that this is what's necessary, then you could tell him 100 times on Shabbos to come open the door for you. It's no problem. Because of the fact that he's doing it for himself. He knew about it ahead of time. It was a business decision. And then it's fine. So that is an option, at least, that helps for getting in the door. Okay, as far as the sensors go, there is the question, I think in a lot of the rooms, it's possible to disable them. Is that correct, Robert Berger? It's possible. It's sometimes possible to disable. I mean, you have to get the permission, or maybe they would have to do it themselves, but it's possible if you know this is coming. Obviously, in today's world, with all of these challenges, it's preferable to avoid staying in such an up-to-date hotel, but if there's maybe Tom Baudet in Motel 6 is looking like a better option, right? Because because of the fact that he says himself, he'll leave the light on for you, right? So there's no problem, right? So you have nothing to worry about, right? But if you're going to go into the, to some high class, Marriott or Hyatt or something like that, so then you could be asking for trouble. But finally, just with the elevators, again, this is a big question with the Shabbos elevators. Here also the technology changes constantly because it used to be that it was a relatively simple issue and now it's much more complicated because there are all kinds of sensors that say, when the doors open and close and so forth. Basically, a person should try to avoid using an elevator on Shabbos. A Shabbos elevator, is a lot of people allow a Shabbos elevator. It has to be set up in advance by someone who knows what they're doing and is tuned in to the technology and the halacha. But essentially, a Shabbos elevator, which is found in kosher hotel, Jewish hotels, the elevator stops on every floor, automatically. So, there are people that allow that. The general consensus is that it should only be relied upon for a person in great need, a person who's unable to get down the steps. But if it's possible to take a lower floor, that would be better. To tell a guy to push the button for you in a hotel, in an elevator, it runs into a lot of these questions. So now if you know that, there's a guy who's staying on my floor who's going into the hotel, is about to go into the elevator, I'll run in together with him. It could be that's all right, but you have to know what other technology is involved. I'm sorry.
So why can't you rely on the unintended result?
Right.
With all this sophisticated.
Yeah, it could be. In other words, the question just is that if it's an unintended result, but it's a psik ratio and it's nicholei. In other words, the elevator is not a psik ratio that you're unhappy about. In other words, that you want. You want the elevator to go for you. So therefore, that complicates the matter a little bit more. So in a place where it's a Jewish owned hotel, and Eretz Yisrael, they have this, and even maybe from Pesach, they have the hotels they rig up with the Shabbos, Shabbos setting for the elevator. So, if it's a case of need, a person could go in it, but if not, to simply run in when a guy is in the elevator is not the simplest thing in the world. So if sometimes you can't avoid it, the person in the hospital or something, a person in the hospital already is in a very bedievit situation, and a lot of things change in that type of context, but to willingly take a room on the 38th floor of the Marriott for Shabbos is something that may not be the best idea to do either. So these are some of the issues. Like I say, there aren't so many great solutions, but if at least the person is sensitized to what the issues are, should the situation arise, a person can discuss it with a rav and at least present it on an intelligent level to try to get an accurate thought.